live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. It's me, Anna D., Anna DeVlantis, back with you today, 1 to 3. Thanks to Amy Guth for filling in yesterday. I took the day off and headed over, me and the family, to New Buffalo, Michigan for the weekend. It was super fun.
I was going to ask you how you enjoyed the day off.
Well, it was like the snow kept lightly falling just about all weekend long. It felt like we were in a snow globe. It was so pretty. It really was so pretty. And then we did the sledding thing. We trudged through the snow and everything like that. My daughter was like just loving it. She's 8. She wanted a sled. She's like, where's the snow been, Mama? We live in Chicago. Where's it been? Super excited just to get out there. And I don't know, G, if you know this, but is the kid tolerance for the snow is a lot higher than the parent and adult tolerance.
I'm sure.
At a certain point, you're sort of like, all right, I'm done.
You're over it.
I'm gonna go get warm, hang out. She's like, no. We got to keep sledding. So we did a lot of sledding and had a lot of fun out
there. She is probably just so thrilled to get a whole day, extra day with Mom.
Well, that was the other part, too. It was fun to be with her. So fun to be with her, fun weekend, and good to be back as well. So we should mention, I know Steve Bertrand's been covering the impeachment trial, which has started in Washington, D.C., and he'll continue to keep us posted at the top and bottom of the hour, won't you, Steve? And I know it sounds like, from what I just heard you say a couple minutes ago, feels like they're just dealing with the rules.
Well, that's
right
what
now.
Anna, that's what the schedule is, that they're going to go over the rules. But in fact, Pat Cipollini, the White House counsel,
University of Chicago grad.
And is he? Made what amounted to sort of an opening statement. Adam Schiff is speaking now, and what he's doing is he's going over, well, in some cases, past impeachments to show how many witnesses were called and how new evidence was allowed and things like that. So this isn't formally the opening statement, but we are hearing from attorneys from both sides of the case right now.
Okay. Well, I know you'll keep us posted throughout the show and jump in as the events warrant. We'll see what happens out there. You're not going to miss a thing there. But a great show in store for you today. Let me tell you what is coming up. Sergeant Pete, our cop expert, is here in studio. He's got a ton of advice, a ton of things to talk about. You've seen this spike in carjackings in Lakeview recently, but there really are pockets of them throughout our entire area right now. It is something that is on the police radar. They're working to combat it. But Sergeant Pete says there are some similarities in these cases, and it also some similarities about who gets targeted. So some ways to sort of kind of just things to keep on your radar about, maybe protect yourself, things to think about. Not always going to be helpful, not always going to be the case, but there really are some common threads.
I want to know from Sergeant Pete if there's particular cars, makes and models that are targeted. So that's what I want to know. Because once I did hear that a certain type of car is a lot easier to steal, then I don't know.
Right. Let's ask him about that. And also in the Lakeview cases, there have been 9 of them this year. In those cases, all 9 of them, the women drivers, all of them women, were sitting idling in their vehicle. So I wonder if that makes you more of a target. We're going to find out about that, because it feels as if there are some things that it's a crime of opportunity, he says. And what makes you the opportune victim? Again, not always a general rule. You can be targeted and not follow under these guidelines, but there are some things to know, he says.
I think about my daily life, and so many times I'm not paying attention to what's going on around me or who's coming up behind me or who I'm standing next to. So it's I'm sure part of it will be to be a little bit more aware.
Yeah, that's part of it,
yeah.
Right? It's just sort of kind of understanding what the situation is. And then Karen Conti is here, attorney Karen Conti, because a couple of issues in the news right now. Is the smell of pot in your car enough for an officer to search your vehicle?
Fascinating.
Now that recreational marijuana is legal, if you just smell pot, you're smelling a legal substance.
Mm-hmm.
Do you treat it like you're smelling cigarette smoke? Or can an officer use that to then go ahead and search your car?
Can I add something to this question?
Mm-hmm.
About, since I ride Uber and Lyft a lot, I wonder if it's okay for Uber and Lyft drivers now to have that smell lingering in their car.
I was in a rideshare about a year ago when it wasn't legal recreationally, mm-hmm. just medically in Illinois, and they said they kicked somebody out of their car for having it, and the smell was outrageous. Do they get to then, you know, it was just the smell of it. Again, is it, it's not criminal anymore, unless it's in a huge quantity, I suppose. But what are the rules there? Because I guess, what if you smell a lot of it? Does that mean you might have a trunk full of it? Is there a rule here? Because the Illinois Supreme Court is taking this up to decide, how do we move forward on this issue?
That's interesting. Because before, you could complain if there was a smell, and then you would get the money back for riding in a car maybe that wasn't up to standard.
Right. And now also you think about if they smell alcohol, is that a reason to start asking you to go through the steps of a DUI? But, you know, it's the recreational marijuana being legal. Again, big legal issue.
Lots of questions.
Lots of questions as we move forward. Also, Karen Conti is going to ask us this question. You've heard about the Major League Baseball cheating scandal. Okay, well, it's been in the news. Everybody's heard about that. What could be the potential legal fallout? She's flagging a couple of issues here that I hadn't even thought of. Can fans sue if you bought a ticket, if you went to the World Series game? Can you do a class action suit and get your money back? She's going to tell us about that. She says there are a number of legal issues that are now being raised because of what happened there. Did they commit a fraud against you as a fan? What if you bet on the other team and you lost your money?
Especially with all of the sports betting that's going
on. Such a big piece of what an industry and what people are doing with their money. So if you bet on the other team, they cheated. Do you deserve to get your money back because you should have won? She says there are a couple of things there that that could move forward. She's going to weigh in on all of that coming up here on the show. And plus, then we have also Front Row Phyllis is here. She's a music scene reporter who got really cool access to some of the hottest country music stars. She's based here in Chicago, but she was in Tennessee over the weekend. She was able to interview Lady Antebellum, and I know Carrie Underwood and Brad Paisley were there, and she got this great access. But they were all part of something that is so much bigger than music. Kids in the hospital, and it was a special cause, and it's just a special thing she was part of. So she's going to tell us about her experiences right here on WGN. Sergeant Pete has stepped into the studio. Before we get to him and a number of issues there, I just want to read one text here, 847. Anna, the smell of pot disgusts me and makes me want to vomit. People stink now. Gross. I said this the other day on the air. I feel like I smell skunk when I'm walking around the downtown streets. It's there. I
mean, it's better than coyotes, right?
Coyotes don't smell, do they? Oh, you mean to see the coyote?
No, if you're going to smell of a wild animal, wouldn't you prefer skunk?
I'm not a fan of the skunk smell. No. Oh. Have you walked at all around the downtown area? It's not a familiar smell. I mean, you used to smell the river, right? That used to be a problem. Now I walk along the river. It's cleaned up. You don't smell it, but now you smell skunk. This is a problem. Walk that way, Steve.
I like a good skunk smell.
You do.
I do.
Who
yeah.
likes a good skunk smell?
After you're fresh,
nobody.
After a roadkill, you don't take that in a little bit.
No.
I think
Steve
you'll
Bertrand,
find there are a lot of us
that like it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Weigh in if you like the skunk smell. Because I don't find many people who like.
Don't
it.
Want it under your porch, but you know.
No, you don't. You don't want to. Yeah, you don't want it on your dog to spray your dog because that's happened to me too.
No, but if you're just driving down the street.
Yeah, smell a skunk. Beautiful. I don't think so. If you like skunk smell like Steve Bertrand, let us know. I feel like it's just not a very likable smell in general. I wonder if they can remove that smell. Like, because do the pot smokers who smoke all the time, do they like the skunk smell? Do you think that everyone likes the skunk? Or you don't smell it when you're doing it yourself? You know? I wonder. All right, let's get to Sergeant Pete. He may have thoughts on this, but probably some bigger thoughts on other issues that we brought you here for. Sergeant Pete Kokonis, 38 years as a Chicago police officer. You see him on the TV locally and nationally as a crime and police analyst. And we have a number of things to talk about. Carjackings. You have some ideas about how to deal with them. We'll talk about that in a minute. Not that everybody will fall under the general rule, but these are crimes of opportunity, you say, and some ways to protect yourself, what they're looking for sometimes. We're going to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about this new initiative. The mayor, Mayor Lightfoot, has put $6 million into a new crime-fighting initiative. We're just hearing about it now, and you have details on it, don't you, Sergeant Pete?
Yes.
First of all, do you like the smell of skunk? Can I ask you that?
No.
Okay, thank you.
I can't. Roadkill.
Two people?
It's, you know.
I never said it was unanimous.
We've got one on the like. Okay, but you're saying they've got this big initiative, and you've got some details about it.
Right. The city is now putting what the mayor refers to as skin in the game, because the outreach program has been funded philanthropically with $3 million. Now the city is putting $6 million into it. And the way that she's orchestrated this is that there are several groups that have started rigorous training academies so that the people that we're going to be seeing out in the street have the complete training, and then they turn around and then they get certified to be one of these outreach
people. So are they citizens, Sergeant Pete, citizens regular citizens can apply for this to become
even
part
guys
of the
with
outreach.
Criminal records, as long as they have support from the community, letters of reference. They've gone through the training. They have credible references from the community. And
so there's a vetting process.
Right. She's not funding hucksters, you know, because years ago they used to have groups like that, and they'd be on the street corners and you'd ask them what's going on. And then you find out the gangs are paying them to mislead the police where they're hiding in buildings.
So this is more of a, is it a community trust building thing as much as it is a crime fighting tool? Or what would you say about
it? They're basically reaching out to people that are going to be the victims or the offenders in shootings. It's you're one day you're one, another day you're another. So they're going to try to intercede and talk with these groups and get maybe gang leaders or whatever. And if some sort of altercation arises between gangs, they're going to try to mediate that and get involved in that, because you keep hearing now it's referred to as a health issue more than it is a crime issue.
How is it a health issue more than a crime?
Look at the billions of dollars that are spent for each shooting victim. You did a report on that some time ago.
I did. Talk about
the exorbitant cost it is for one person getting shot.
An exorbitant cost to the city when you think about resources,
ambulances,
and
hospitals, doctors, and you know they don't have the money to pay.
To say nothing about what it does to a community when stores shutter and areas are deemed not safe, and what it does to impact the lives of people who live there, right, on top of
this year,
the economic cost.
So far this month, that we've had 25 murders.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than in the last few years. 25.
I thought our crime numbers have been going down, though. I thought the trends at the end of the year were that we...
Last year, the city statistics show it's 490-some murders, which is down. But already in January, you have 25, mm-hmm. unless there was one... Since I came on, you know, since I got up this morning.
Let's hope not.
You know.
But think something like this. As someone who has been on the streets and worked with guys who are in gangs, you've worked with people who are likely to be targets, you've worked with people who are likely to be shooters involved in crimes. Something like this, do you think it holds promise?
Yeah, I do. I think there has to be some way. The bottom line is you can have... you know, a great clearance rate, which the detectives have now, it's up over 54%. So you have a great clearance rate. But the point is, just think, if the community helped you a little bit, your clearance rate could be 20 points higher. Because the community, they've got to get away from being afraid, and snitches end up with stitches, or, you know, that
huge consequences to a person or their family for cooperating with police.
If you have this outreach guy, or you have a policeman that you can trust, you can call me, you can call whomever, and you can say, well, I know this is a guy. You don't have to give me all the information on the crime. Just put me in the right direction. Give me the gang. Give me the location. Give me what group. Give me what guys you saw in the neighborhood. Let me build my case from that point forward.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. We want to get to the carjacking issue, but first I also want to ask you about the next superintendent. The search is underway. Not hearing that much about it other than more than 20 people have applied, men, women, minorities, out-of-town candidates, internal candidates, a lot of people to look at here. What's the process now moving forward?
Well, they'll go through the resumes. They'll go through the qualifications. There's certain things that I'm assuming that they're going to look at, you know, the size of the police department that you were a supervisor in, what you have to offer, what your plans are, how you plan to implement them. So I think there's 23 applicants. Of course, I'm not one of them. But
thanks for telling us that.
I just appreciate want it. People to know, but they could vote me in. You have 23 applicants, and so they'll probably knock it down to 10 or 12, and then they'll do a rigorous background on those 10 or 12. And then what the police board does is they come up with three people they think fit the bill. Those three people's names are then given to Mayor Lightfoot. Mayor Lightfoot can say, I like, and I'm going to take one of these, or I don't like any of them, give me three more and throw all three of those out. It's up to her and what she sees in her vision for the city.
And that's true. And it feels as if she has a great background dealing with police issues. She's somebody who's well-equipped to answer these, and I wish her the success in handling them.
I mean, it's a hard thing to come in and take this thing over. I listened to Toni Preckwinkle talk last week about what she's done to reduce crime. She did nothing. And she's taking a credit for a reduction in crime that Johnson did, that, you know, Emanuel had a piece in, and that Lightfoot did. So Preckwinkle stepping up and say, well, I reduced crime. She didn't reduce crime. She just put more people back out on the street.
I'm sure there's those who would say that she has. And it's, look, I want them all to be successful.
Give me figures.
I want them all to be successful on this front. It's better for all of us who live here, all of us who call this home. It's better for bringing people to this city, setting up businesses here. It's a real issue that I think Mayor Lightfoot is going at it so far in the right way. It feels as if she's getting positive results, positive trends.
She is.
And this initiative, the $6 million initiative, is, I think, a way to get the community more involved, which is something that's so hard to do, rebuilding that trust over the years with the police department, a cooperative effort between police and community members who, as you point out, have to go through an intensive vetting process, an intense training program in order to be qualified to then get out there and serve in this manner.
Get out there, get paid, and do something for the money that you're earning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a couple things we want to get to. The carjacking issue. Sergeant Pete is our guest. He's 38 years a Chicago police officer. He serves as a crime analyst on local and national media. Sometimes you see him on the Fox News. He's everywhere on these issues because you've had a career where you've dealt with a number of them, and you have great advice in this way. Carjackings, there are some similarities into who gets targeted and what you should do, what you should know about that. We need to get to that. Plus, there's a pressing issue here because Steve Bertrand has started something, and I did not at all expect this kind of a reaction.
You got to pay a little more attention, okay?
Did you see this? Everyone's weighing in to say, Steve, I do like the skunk smell. I like it. The older it gets, the smellier I like it, like my cheese. I like it smelly. Well, I'm with Steve on the skunk smell.
I've never compared it to cheese, but, you know, I can see how someone would go there.
Cheese.
What a really cheese. Bad skunk spray smells like almost gasoline. It is brutal.
Well, who doesn't like the smell of gasoline?
Oh, well, no. Gosh, I'm with you, Anna, just so you know.
Thank you, Lauren. I'm just a little surprised by how many people
I am too.
Are into the skunk smell. Sometimes people are saying here that they like it when it's not too pungent. If it's just, here's somebody who is on our side, Lauren. Dave, if you like the smell of skunk, you probably like Brut Cologne. I like Brut Cologne.
Well, you
actually.
Can buy it in bulk, and the Brut lasts forever, so I get that too.
Maybe you're onto something here.
One of my favorite things, we had two cousins from Ireland staying, and they'd heard about it, but never actually experienced the skunk. So there was one outside our house. My wife lifted the window, and just to watch their face was hilarious.
They just freaked, right, and didn't like it?
Yeah, nothing brand new experience to them.
Yeah, you forget that the skunks are not in Europe, so they or most parts of Europe. I know my relatives in England, too, say they've never seen a skunk. Irritating, yet good at the same time, the skunk smell. And
right, it's like, here, smell. Oh, I don't want to smell so good. Oh yeah, I get it now.
How do you smell skunk? Let's see, in the 70s pots didn't smell like skunk. A couple of years ago, my son and I were just outside Wrigley Field. I said my normal low voice, hey, do you smell skunk? And he's like, no, that's not skunk, Dad. Skunk.
We used to have to rely on St. Pauli Grill beer. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember St. Pauli.
That used to smell a little skunky.
Does it smell skunky?
Yeah.
Does bad beer smell skunky?
Yes.
Canadian in green,
beer.
Yeah.
Okay, the skunk thing, I'm astonished, but apparently it's a smell.
I apologize, Sergeant. I didn't mean to do this.
And he's got some number that he's with us for a few more minutes here, so we've got more from Sergeant Pete, and that's coming up here after Steve's news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Thank you, Steve, newsman extraordinaire, and also liker of the skunk smell, turns out, along with many of our listeners, which surprises the heck out of me. But there you go, Sergeant Pete. Kokonis is here, 38 years a Chicago police officer. You see him on the TV. He's a regular on crime and police analysts of all kinds of things, but he's based here in Chicago for years and years and years, and he's seen a lot of things. A number of carjackings are in the news, and I want to ask you about this, Pete, because I immediately saw it, and I thought, 9 carjackings in one neighborhood in Lakeview this year so far, and there were similarities in just these cases, and it made me wonder, are there situations in general that we should sort of be on the lookout for. In these cases, they were female drivers. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but there were female drivers. They were all sitting idle in their car. They were idling their cars. They weren't moving. They weren't stopped at a stop sign or a stop light when they were approached by the armed carjacker. Does that surprise you?
No. Sadly, these brave carjackers feel that a woman is an easier target. And sometimes you have to realize, you have to be aware of your surroundings. You can't just have your earphones on. You can't be sitting in the car while it's running, looking at your messages on your cell phone, which is illegal now.
It's illegal?
Yeah, you can't have your cell phone in your hand while
Even
you're
if you're
driving.
Sitting idle.
But the car's running.
Okay.
Okay. I would think that, you know, that's a problem. Maybe,
but it keeps you distracted, is the
right.
point.
Anything that distracts you. These guys are going, the carjackings are going up because it's a lot easier now to carjack than it is to steal a car. The new electronic ignitions and everything, it used to be you pop the lock out and stick a screwdriver in the ignition, turn the car on, and you're on your way. Most of these cars, you have to have a key fob, you have to have the car running, you have a start push button now. So if the car's running, it makes it easier for this guy to get, or the group. And what they do is they'll
drive. Yeah, there's more than one you find in these
recent cases. They'll drive around neighborhoods, three and four guys in a car, and they'll drive around neighborhoods. And they're going to, you know, it's like they're sheep and they're wolves. They're wolves. So they're going to go to a neighborhood that's got nice cars. They're going to want to take the newer Toyota, the Range Rover, the Jeep, the BMW, the Benz.
So the question was asked earlier, is there a certain type of car? And you're saying that
high-end
cars, right. newer cars,
in-demand cars.
Because
they're going to use that car, or a truck, to run through a window and steal from a store, or just drive it around, do a drive-by, do whatever. They're not going to keep that car for an extended period of time because it'll be on the hot sheet, and it'll, you know, depending on where they're taking it and what neighborhood it is, it's going to stand out.
So they might use it to commit a crime and then dump it somewhere, or do they sell
dump it? No, they dump it. It's that with all the VIN numbers stamped on everything, it's really hard for chop shops now to use parts for cars. So, you know, in the old days, it was if you pieced out a car part by part, you made more money than what the car actually cost.
That's not the case anymore.
Not anymore. I think that you're walking to your car. You've got groceries in your hand. You have to look around and see what's around you. You have to be aware of what's around you. You have to. My wife is she does this all the time. Her purse is on the front seat, or she's got stuff in the back seat, or whatever.
Very visible through the window.
Right. And that's just. And the bottom line, it comes down to this: if you're in the car and a guy wants your car. And he, man, woman, or driving, it doesn't matter. If he's got a gun, get out of the car, tell him have a nice day, and don't argue with him, don't make eye contact, don't raise your voice. Just calmly say, I'm getting out of the car. If you got kids in the car, tell them, I have children in the back seat.
Now, why would you do that? If presuming they don't see your child, right?
They do. Very rarely, if they steal a car and they find kids in the car, they'll usually dump it a block away. Because now you've got a whole new thing of kidnapping.
Yeah.
And there's you know, these devices. I looked up before we were talking.
Yeah, Terry Savage was in here earlier talking about finance, and you two were on the side comparing a safety device that I thought was interesting we should share with you, our listener. It's called the Safeguard Personal Alarm, and Terry had it on her keychain,
right.
she carries it around.
And I think Amazon has them for $15. It's not a push button or a spray or any of that stuff. It's on a fob, and all you do is if you're afraid or you're concerned or somebody does, you pull this thing and it pops off the fob, and it makes a 300 decibel shrieking, shrilling sound that people
like
can hear.
Like a fire drill or a fire alarm in
worse,
a building?
Worse. It's just so high and so loud that it should have anybody running. And just in case, and they do get in your car and they drive away, at least you're protected by yourself. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's more,
to you and...
there's more things out there, but I just happened to look up this one, and Terry happened to have the safeguard one.
She said she likes it. Yeah, she uses it. The other issue we want to make sure we get to is this technology is providing new tools for police, and we talk about this a lot. You've got facial recognition software. You've got a number of things that are now a tool for police and to use in terms of solving crimes, but it's raising issues about that technology. You have several companies that are actually pulling people's data from social media, pulling your pictures, pulling all kinds of information about you, and then selling it to security firms and police departments and that kind of thing. I suppose it's okay. You put your information out there. I suppose you have to accept that it's out there for anyone to use. It's still a little alarming to me.
It's a little startup company that helps law enforcement match photos of unknown people to their online images. And what's scary, the guy that started is from Australia. His name is Hon Tan. And he has somehow devised a program where he takes your pictures. He uploads pictures of persons from their public photos, from Facebook, from other websites where you post photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And Clearview claims they have done Facebook, YouTube, Venmo, millions of other websites, and they say they have 3 billion faces. Now, I don't know if that's an exaggeration.
3 billion in the United States, or is that a global number?
Across the world, I think.
Okay.
So now, here's some large cities have barred police officers from using facial recognition, and because of the chance that you can make a mistake or the picture is grainy.
Or there's also been a few instances where you've seen that there aren't enough minorities in the database so that it can confuse different people and identify the wrong suspect, potentially, not just for minorities, but overall. I mean, it's not foolproof. It's technology, and it's advancing all the time, but it's not perfect.
No, and some of these cities that have used this, the policemen have got around this ban by saying they've used other outside information to identify an offender or somebody that they were going after. So they're not saying I'm using this Clearview AI or this facial recognition technology, trying to skirt around the issue. And once no matter what you have technology, it takes years for the police department to catch up to technology, just like it takes normal people that much time to catch up with technology. I don't even know how to use my smartphone that well.
Well, it's true. In California, they're passing this rule that you can now find out what data is actually out there about you. You can ask for a tech company to give it to you, and they have to give it to you. And some people are really surprised at what's out there. Quickly, though, those Ring doorbell cameras that a lot of people have now, they're also a tool for police. But what I'm hearing about those is that you opt in and you allow a police department to use it. If there's been a crime in your neighborhood, they put out an alert. Would you be able to give me your video? And then you can choose to offer it up.
If a lot of people on your block have Ring doorbells, they're a wonderful assist to law enforcement for, say, package thieves or, you know, sexual assaults or kidnappings, carjackings, things like that. If I could find somebody that knew how to put in a Ring doorbell, I'd have a Ring doorbell. My electrician said he can't do it.
Really?
So
I'll get you a guy. I got a guy for that.
Oh, you got a guy?
I got a guy for that. I do. Okay. I do have a guy for that. And I hear they're not that hard, that we might be able to figure it out. But I do have a guy, so I'll hook you up with that. But you would want one.
Oh, absolutely. I think it'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Just, for my safety. I'm a senior citizen, and my wife and the dog and, my neighbors and stuff.
You seem like the kind of guy that people would not target. But this is my feeling. That's just my feeling. I don't know. Sergeant Pete Kokonis, thank you for being here. We always love hearing from you. Thanks for the advice. Thanks for everything. And thanks for weighing in on my side on the skunk debate. I appreciate that as well. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Now, coming up here on WGN Radio, Karen Conti of Conti Law is here. She is an amazing person. She's also a rock star attorney who can help us understand a couple of things going on in the news. One of them, did you see the headline? Is the smell of pot in your car enough for an officer to search your vehicle? It's an interesting debate. Currently, we just heard from Sergeant Pete. He says, yes, that's what he says. We'll hear what Karen Conti says on that. Plus, baseball fans, Major League Baseball fans, can you now sue? Is there a class action lawsuit in the wake of the cheating scandal. Back live here in the Skyline studio, this is Anna DeVlantis, along with high-profile rock star attorney Karen Conti of Conti Law. Thanks for being here, Karen.
And you wonder why I come here. You say all these nice things about me.
I don't know an issue where you haven't like enlightened me in some way, shape, or form. So when I see things, I'm like, what is this? What about this? And you're like, oh, this is what that is.
I'm on retainer with you at all times.
And it's a well-paid position. I appreciate that you work for it free. The smell of pot in your car enough for an officer to search your vehicle? We got to get to that because it's making huge headlines here locally. The Illinois Supreme Court is weighing in on it, and I think it just opens up a number of things, but you brought to my attention something I had not really considered before. The Major League Baseball cheating scandal.
Yes.
Huge news. Everybody's talking about it. It seems there's a new wrinkle, a new thing that unfolds every day as it goes by to say, oh, that happened or that happened. But you talk about the legal fallout of this, and there might be some sort of something happening.
There might be. I read that there was one sports agency, betting agency, that gave back money for people who bet on it. So I'm thinking to myself, ooh, what would stop people from getting into a class action lawsuit to sue, saying, hey, you know what, we bet against the team, and this was not a fair game. It was stacked because they were cheating, and now I want my money back. And now again, sports betting was not declared constitutional by the Supreme Court until after this happened.
Oh.
But people in Las Vegas were betting millions of dollars on these events. So could there be a class action lawsuit? Yes. Could they win? I don't know. Are you guaranteed of a right to a fair baseball game? Is that part of what you assume when you're betting on a sports team? I think maybe you could argue that that is in fact what you're betting on, that so you're going to get a fair game.
If you put money on the Dodgers instead of the Astros,
right,
then you lost your money.
Yeah.
And maybe the cheating scandal is considered fraud, or what would they have to prove?
They would have to prove that either Major League Baseball or the team knew or should have known that what they were doing was fraudulent, and it changed. Had you known that this was going to be fixed, you wouldn't have bet on it otherwise. And you know, you could even say as a person who's watching the game, you paid for tickets to see a fair game. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that you are able to prove to a jury that this was not a fair game and it's not what you bargained for. Does everyone get their money back?
And those are pricey tickets.
Yes. And you know, it's again, I'm not stoking litigation here. I just think it's an interesting question.
It really is, because it comes down to the fan who really was cheated here.
Right.
Ultimately, that's part of the piece of this, is that yes, baseball's got to figure this out. And now you hear more and more people weighing in to say, sort of doesn't surprise me. We've kind of known that this sort of thing has been happening in baseball, but is it okay?
And here's the other thing. Should we be putting people in jail? And again, I hope I'm not overreacting, but the Black Sox, remember that? I mean, not that we remember it, but it was 1919. The White Sox were accused, I believe it was 8 players, of throwing the World Series, and they were prosecuted. Now, they were acquitted, and they were thrown out of baseball, but they prosecuted them under the theory that this was fraud, criminal fraud. And do you think this is criminal fraud? I'd like to know what your listeners are thinking about. I mean, is this something that was deceptive? And did people rely on it? And did people lose? And were people damaged by it? I think you can argue yes.
So the latest piece, we talk about things unfolding all the time. Jose Altuve, one of the players, have you seen the video? There's video of him wanting to take something off.
Yeah, I didn't actually see it myself, but I read the accounts of it where he's running around the base path, and you can actually see him kind of holding on to his jersey, yelling to his team members, don't take my jersey off. Don't rip my jersey off, because apparently he was wired and he didn't want everyone to see it.
Mm-hmm. There's much more to come out on all of that. But so far, you don't know of any lawsuits that have been filed. You're just saying that in the legal community, people are saying, well, wait a minute, is there something there?
And, you know, there are always lawyers who are going to bring these cases for fun and for notoriety.
Sure.
And I'm not suggesting that it's a good thing to do, but you know, why not? I mean, I think a lot of people were disappointed and upset. And how about the players themselves, whose batting averages or their earned run averages took a hit because of what was going on? I mean, you can't get an earned run average back. So how do you quantify the loss for someone who's being cheated on?
I don't know. I don't know that you do. And fascinating issues. I'm glad you brought that up. I had not seen or heard that take before. We also want to talk to you about this, Karen Conti. Is the smell of pot in your car enough for an officer to search your vehicle? Now that we have legal recreational marijuana, it's supposedly legal. Is it treated like cigarette smoke? If I smell cigarettes, you're not going to do, you know, that doesn't mean you can search your vehicle.
Does that make it probable cause that a crime was committed? Now, a Maryland court actually held that it wasn't, which kind of surprises me, because in Illinois, you even though pot is legal, you can't smoke pot in your car.
Oh.
So if a police officer stops you and there's the smell of marijuana, you've probably committed a crime by smoking in the car because you're supposed to keep it, you know, in the trunk separately in a container. So it's going to surprise me to say that that's not probable cause, although, like I said, a court has ruled in the other direction.
It's, you know, you have to remind people, it's still illegal to smoke in public, still illegal to smoke while driving. It's definitely illegal to be under the influence while driving. We just saw a case over the weekend or maybe yesterday where a driver in Lyle was pulled over, may become the first driving while drugged or driving under the influence of marijuana case. They feel that the crash that driver was involved with was related to smoking marijuana or consuming it in some way. But so that's moving forward. But it's fascinating to think. So you still would think, okay, you smell the smoke. You're an officer. You smell marijuana. We know what it smells like. It smells like skunk. We have a number of people who like that smell. I don't understand that, but that is a thing. Are you a fan of the skunk
smell? No, I'm not. No, I don't like that smell.
Thank you for saying that. Okay, so but the officers need to have probable cause. That's what it comes down to.
Right, that a crime was committed and the person and the search that you're going to embark on is going to lead to you know, finding somebody who committed the crime. And it seems to me reasonable that if you're not allowed to smoke in the car and you smell smoke in the car, then you probably have a crime that was committed. You know, there's going to be so much of this, Anna, because you still can't be impaired. I mean, even when it comes to custody cases that I've been involved in with children, the judges are saying, well, yeah, you can smoke pot, but you can't do it with your kids present. And if you are showing up impaired to your visitation, you know, you're going to have your kids you're not going to have visitation with your kids. So again, same with the workplace. We know that it's legal, but your boss can have different rules to say that you can't do it.
And what if you just smell like it, though, too? Because it could be on you if you smoked earlier.
Sure.
I suppose. But, I mean, there's just so much there, Karen Conti. But so the Illinois Supreme Court is taking this issue up. That they're looking at a case that's related to that. And in the process, we might get some sort of answers?
Yes, probably. And then that case might even, you know, the states might all differ on it. And then guess what? The Supreme Court gets it. The U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, all right. So then the other thing we want to talk about is Harvey Weinstein. So jury selection underway. And I know you know the Chicago attorney who is the lead in his defense, or one of the attorneys.
Yes, there's two of them from Chicago who have gone out there. One is a female, one is a male. The female has really made a nice living on representing people who are accused of rape. She's a very good lawyer. The other one is also a very good lawyer. But, you know, the jury's picked now. We have 12 people and seven. I guess it's, you know, we've got a couple alternatives, too.
Okay, and one of the jurors made news because she wrote a novel about predatory older men, and she was seated on the jury. So she's one of the 12 jurors seated in the Harvey Weinstein case. She wrote a novel about predatory older men and their relationships with younger women. It seems as if that would be a conflict. Not that I'm necessarily rooting for Harvey Weinstein in this case, but it just feels as if when you talk about a fair trial, how is that okay?
Well, yeah, and I think that when she filled out her questionnaire, she omitted that she didn't say anything about that. And when asked, she was kind of evasive, if you look at the words. So did she lie? I'm not sure you can say she lied, but she certainly wasn't forthcoming about the fact she wrote this book. Why wouldn't she be forthcoming? Why? Because she probably wants to sit on this jury. You know, if she wrote a book, and the name of the book, I think it even talks about it's being, you know, men and women having different ages and that type of thing. I think it's a problem. I think that maybe the judge could have excluded her for cause if she has an agenda like that. The judge chose not to do it, and the lawyers were out of challenges. You only get 20 challenges, and they had already used up all their challenges and were stuck with her. Now, here's the problem, too. Anna, I agree with you. Like, maybe you don't like Harvey Weinstein. Maybe you're looking forward to him being put in jail. But we have to have integrity with the prosecution, because I don't want Harvey Weinstein to say, well, I was convicted because I had a juror who was a liar and who had an agenda. I want this verdict to be a correct verdict and a verdict that's going to stand for what it needs to stand for.
Can you ever reverse that decision if you find out an email that's damning that says, I hate Harvey Weinstein, I hope he burns in hell, and if I were ever on that jury, I would definitely say guilty of all charges?
You see those challenges being made. In fact, if you look back at the George Ryan prosecution when one of our governors was on
which
trial,
one are you
I know,
okay.
Right, exactly. But there were some jurors who I think one of them lied about her criminal record, okay? And they found out later that she had had lied about it, and they tried to use that in an appeal, and it wasn't successful. But I think there have been cases where, yeah, I mean, if someone's being unfair or not telling the truth, that could be a cause for an appeal.
So in this case, the Chicago attorneys are going with the consent. I've seen them everywhere. They've been going on national news to talk about how Harvey Weinstein, they're basically the defense is exactly what you said it would be when you were on the program last week, is they're going to say these relationships were consensual.
They were, and the evidence is going to be that some of the women stayed in touch with Weinstein, and then there's going to be an expert who comes and says, well, that happens in rape cases where, you know, you see women who have been raped who still try to curry favor with the person. And so it's front and central of this case is, did these women consent at the moment it happened?
It'll be interesting to see and watch what unfolds there in the courtroom. Karen Conti of Conti Law, you handle all kinds of law, and we really appreciate that you come in and deal with us as well and weigh in on these issues. Thank you, Karen.
You're welcome.
More to come here on WGN News, including the news from Steve Bertrand, who's tracking everything locally, and also the events out of Washington, D.C. from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Anna DeBlant is live in the Skyline Studios. It's Tech Tuesday, and we want to talk about tech jobs, growing tech businesses in the city of Chicago. It's good for all of us when that happens. And we have two great minds here to weigh in on this. Terry Howerton, he's the CEO of Tech Nexus. That's a venture collaborative firm here in Chicago. Bit under the radar, but really doing amazing things in terms of being one of the premier investors, venture investors in the world, really, and doing some things locally here. Really cool. We want to talk about that. Scott Catoon is here. He's the CEO of Technori. You watch the podcast, you listen to it, you see him on WGN Radio, your startup showcase, right, Scott?
Everywhere.
You're everywhere. You got to be these days.
You can have a channel for anything anymore. That's the cool part. Or the bad part, too. It depends on how you look at that.
I know. There's a little of that, too. It's like, ooh, should that really be a channel? But it is. Terry, let's talk to you, because I think one of the issues here, and you hear it all the time, we have a mayor now, Mayor Lightfoot, who is setting new policies for the future. And one of the things I continually hear her say is, for growth, for the future, for this city, we need to attract new businesses. We need to build jobs here. That's part of the way out of this financial mess is by doing that. So I wonder, in the tech community, which is a growing area, are we doing a good job here? What do you see? What are you witnessing?
Well, first, thanks for having me on Tech Tuesday. I was sort of half expecting tacos as well. But,
That's a great idea.
Work that in, maybe a sponsor of some sort.
See,
some
you guys are idea
there.
People. This is what I like. I just sit with you and I learn.
Always creating, always entrepreneurs. Listen, I think that the tech community in Chicago for the last 15 years, I started the Technology Association here back in 2004. Really started bringing together a lot of what was already a massive set of players in the tech industry, but almost no community, right? Even companies in 2004 that I looked at and thought were technology companies didn't identify as that.
Yeah.
You could go to Orbitz, who spun out of, you know, United Airlines and the airline industry, and, you know, at their core, their DNA, they were kind of a travel company developing technology. And you could go across the river, you know, frankly, to companies like Archipelago or even the Mercantile Exchange today, I think those are technology companies. There just was no community. They didn't come together and network. Now, we've been very successful as a team with folks like Scott and many, many others over the years of bringing that together. And now, as a result, to answer your question, Chicago's tech community employs and has created more jobs by orders of magnitude than any other industry.
Than you thought at this point, you've been involved in it from back in the day.
No, I don't think it's more than I thought, because two things are happening simultaneously. Number one, the pure play technology companies, the companies that are growing up, entrepreneurial starts, creating jobs, particularly around sort of B2B, particularly around the types of innovations that the customers happen to be right here in the backyard. The manufacturing companies, the logistics companies, the financial services companies, the agriculture companies. What Chicago's really, really good at is building tech solutions for that. Maybe not so much B2C, maybe not so much the kinds of things that you would see other parts of the country really chasing after. We're really good at that B2B industry transformative type of technology. So yes, lots of great jobs there. But the other thing, Anna, that's happening is every company's becoming a tech company. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, JPMorgan Chase is a tech company.
Is that true? Are they?
Yeah, absolutely.
We talked about this last week, right? The fact that that Jamie Dimon came out and said we should be valued as a subscription company, essentially.
A subscription company.
It's just, yeah, I mean, it's the company. Imagine how many people are on that app every single day.
But why is everybody clamoring to be called a tech company?
I don't think it's clamoring. It's not just making. It's beyond that. It's not just window dressing. We're not just trying to pretend. Really, all companies are being transformed right now. All industries are being transformed now by about a half a dozen core technologies, right? The impact of automation, robotics, artificial intelligence is radically redefining what it means to be in the agriculture business, what it means to be in the transportation mm-hmm. business, what it means to be in the banking business. So is data and data and analytics. So true is the opportunity to do different business models, like Scott was saying, right? Like, one of my corporate partners at TechNexus, we form joint ventures with big corporations, usually older corporations. One of our corporate partners that we're out building an ecosystem of entrepreneurs around right now is Brunswick Corporation. Now, Anna, when I say Brunswick,
what I think of bowling.
Bowling.
Okay. Right. I'm at the bowling alley. I'm at Waveland after high school from Lane Tech. We go over to the Waveland Bowl and we see the Brunswick signs.
Perfect. So
is that what it is?
Here's the fun thing. Number one, Brunswick is a 175-year-old company. They've been on the New York Stock Exchange for, I think, 112 years.
Okay.
There's maybe 10 companies on the planet that are like that are alive still today.
Seriously.
They got into the bowling business somewhere around year 40 and got out of it probably somewhere around 40 years ago for all practical purposes. They've been a number of different things. They've been a fitness company. Today, they're a pure play marine company. Brunswick owns a huge chunk. They're the biggest player in the recreational marine space. They have Sea Ray yachts and Boston Whaler boats and Mercury Marine engines And we formed a joint venture with them to go build an entrepreneurial ecosystem around the future of boats. Let's just oversimplify for a second. But that's a tech company. I mean, even though they shape fiberglass and they make boats, the truth is their future is all about autonomous navigation, new access models. How do people, younger folks who don't want to buy a boat but do want to experience a boat,
how does that happen?
Well, they don't today because those models don't really exist, at least at scale, but they're being created now. They're being created by entrepreneurs in partnership with Brunswick and us. And Brunswick recognizes that this fiberglass shaping company, this 176-year-old business, its business today is as much tech innovation as it is, and business innovation because of technology, as it is anything else.
We've got more to talk about Tech Tuesday here. No tacos today. Next time, I promise. So if you come back, Terry Howerton, I promise I'll have in Scott Catoon. Maybe we can go halvesies on the tacos. That would happen next week. But this week, we're just talking tech here in Chicago, and there's much more to talk about. A lot of technology advances. You were talking about everyone's getting into the finance game as well. You see Amazon now coming up with this palm print everyone seems to want to get a piece of processing your payments. They're handling it for you. That's something else. There's more to talk about on the local tech scene here in Chicago. So Scott Catoon and Terry Howerton are back with more here on WGN in a moment. You're listening to WGN here from the Skyline Studios. This is Anna DeVlantis. They're Chicago. They're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten. Get real in the morning with the WGN TV morning news team. It's all weekdays, 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. on WGN. Our guest, Terry Howerton, CEO of TechNexus, Scott Catoon, CEO of TechNori. They've both been a part of the Chicago technology and entrepreneurial scene for a long time and know a lot of people. And this is why I ask you about the future for Chicago. It's such an issue for all of us. We're all vested in technology doing well here, small companies getting involved and becoming big tech companies. You had an example of that earlier, Terry.
Well, I think we were talking about during the previous segment the idea that all companies in one way or another evolving towards being a technology business, right? And I think that has to do with not only the impact of those technologies like robotics and automation and new uses of data. It also is about the ethos. It's thinking about, as Scott said earlier, a subscription service. So if you're a boat builder, you want to think about what it means to subscribe to boat access or on-water experiences as much as you want to think about how you sell a boat back in the back days. And that's kind of an extreme example, but to prove the point. Listen, Anna, there is unprecedented amounts of global economic disruption happening right now. Now, 734 of the companies that were on the Fortune 1000 list a decade ago. 734 of the largest 1,000 companies in the United States aren't on that list today.
Gee.
In 10 years. Now, you'd have to pretty much go back, I think, in world economic history to the Stone Age, and you're still probably not going to find a time in which the largest enterprises of the world have churned. And now that's happening for a lot of reasons. It's happening because of the pace of innovation, the pace of technology. Entire industries are being made irrelevant. It's happening a lot because entrepreneurs, it's been democratized. I can start a company not just in Silicon Valley or in Chicago. I can start a company in a closet in Cincinnati or in Tel Aviv or just about anywhere around the world and have it be impactful. That transformation, that disruption that's happening, I think represents a great opportunity for Chicago.
Well, and I think that's the thing. It's you need policies, you need sort of people who are on board with that. I think our mayor is. You want to create opportunities or at least the environment to allow that to happen. Do you feel like we have that? Are we building that?
I mean, I think so. I think one of the things, and that obviously Terry has a good point that's coming up here for all of you listeners on this, is we have done a nice job over the last, as he says, 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. Chicago's not what it was 5 years ago, even, or 3 years ago, or 1 year ago. But we still are missing potentially half of the people in the city being participating. The number of companies founded by females that are funded is still dismal. The number of minority founders and minority tech workers is still abysmal. And we need to do a lot more to bring those in. And it's not just about inclusive and diversity as much as it is. It just makes good sense.
Why is that? I mean, they are abysmal. You hear about it all the time. Why? Have we drilled down on the answers for that?
I mean, that's like a, what'd you say, Terry?
It's a TED Talk, maybe. Or a seminar, a documentary. There's no simple answer.
I think I've done a TED Talk on it, actually. But no, look, I think the mayor's commitment to inclusion, economic inclusion, economic opportunity,
big priority for
everyone is incredibly important to us. As a community, as a business community. Anna, this is a city, you go back all through its history, this is a city that entrepreneurs actually built,
mm-hmm.
right? You think about the Montgomery Wards of the day, the Burnham plans. This was a city where the business community stepped up and said, I'm going to have more than a profit motive. I'm going to think about preserving 26 miles of lakefront for future generations. I'm going to think about bringing all the neighborhoods into the economic boom that we're trying to grow. I think over the last 30 or so years, right, that City Hall somehow became a little bit more command and control. City Hall seemed to be a little more involved in all of the business decisions that were being made. And as a result of that, a lot of the business community sort of stepped back. The entrepreneurs were not being engaged. There's a whole new generation of entrepreneurs like Scott that are now here in Chicago that can step up and say what he just said. It's important that we bring everybody along. It's important that we allow more women to have leadership roles, get funded by ventures that we're backing. We need to have folks from every neighborhood to be involved in the jobs that are being created here. That's important because we want to have a great quality of life where mm-hmm. we live. We want to have this innovation engine continue to grow. And I think, frankly, Mayor Lightfoot has done an enormous amount just by articulating how important that is. And then, to her credit, in many ways, sort of stepping out of the way mm-hmm. to challenge the business community to step up and fulfill that.
Yeah, she's been doing an excellent job of that, in my opinion. You know, we lost HQ2 for Amazon, and there were such big headlines over that. But since then, there are smaller headlines that really add up to what maybe equate to an HQ2. You see Amazon adding 400 Chicago tech jobs just in the fall of last year. You see Google expanding by 1 million square feet in the Fulton Market, West Loop area. They're adding employees. There are some growth stories here, aren't there, Scott?
Yeah, no, for sure there are. I mean, I think those are good headlines. And for the average person who's sort of sitting out in the cheap seats watching, it's great. But the part that I think is most important about that is more about the events and the things that are going to take place with all of those people needing to find jobs and needing to train for tech and finding more organizations that like Recode and Women Who Code who get involved now because there is a demand for talent that we can't fulfill potentially at this very moment. Mm. More people can get involved, which is like, it's almost like a restart button in a sense, where now we have to start training more people and getting more people involved. It makes perfect sense to open up and say, hey, what else? How do we get STEM education going so that we can have the next crop of great talent? I think one of the things that Terry kind of was getting into, there is a semi-simple answer on some of this. When you look at, take away all of the systemic things that have withheld all of the, you know, whether it's minority owners, female owners, whatever it may be. One of the biggest parts, in my opinion at least, has been that if the vast majority of people in control of the bucks are old, bald, white men, how would they possibly ever relate or understand what you, Anna, might pitch as a business? They don't understand your point of view. They don't understand problems that you've been faced with that you're trying to solve. But half the population does.
But don't they just, at the bottom line, they want to see a potentially profitable business?
As an old, bald, white man, I completely 100% agree, right? And I think that the idea of having more diverse opinions, more diverse opportunities. Look, entrepreneurs, Anna, I've said this for 20 years of being a voice within the tech community. Entrepreneurs solve the problems that they see.
Yeah.
You see different problems than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the kid growing up on the south side of Chicago sees different problems than I see. The only way that we are going to innovate as a city, grow as an economy, is if we empower all of those people in entrepreneurial ways to come and help us solve those problems. Right, this is I think the path forward for us.
And you take out some of the stoppers along the way, right? You make sure that there is venture funding looks at companies like that and people who may not fit the general mold of exactly who you're seeing all the time. And you have education that you mentioned, Scott.
Education's a huge, huge part of it, right? I was lucky enough to be a part of starting a public school here, about ready to celebrate its 10th anniversary in Chicago Tech Academy.
Remind us what it's called again.
Chicago Tech Academy. And the ethos in the beginning was that we wanted to get the local tech community involved. At the time, 150 local tech companies got involved to help define what the experience would be. Not just the classroom experience, but the internships and the externships and the mentorships and the other types of things that were involved. And the reason we did that was a couple of things. Number one, we wanted to make the argument that it really didn't matter where they came from. It only mattered where they were going. It really didn't matter what experience they had had already with Chicago public schools or what things they had studied. We just wanted to give them increased social capital. We wanted to give them exposure to these careers in the future that we knew they could go and be successful in, and a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of what that means. It doesn't mean you're going to start a company. It doesn't mean you have to go get venture funding. It just means, you know, risk taking in different ways and the ability to articulate solutions to problems.
We only have about 30 seconds here, but you're seeing great success stories coming out of there in 10 years?
You've seen really amazing, wonderful, anecdotal success stories. Right? You've seen
awesome.
Life-changing situations for individual students and families. How do you make it systemic? Well, you got more people that have to step up and have to support those kinds of causes if you're going to make it systemic.
It sounds like a great thing. Can people apply to go to this Chicago Tech Academy?
No, it's an open public school. It's a luck of the draw. And every year that I've participated for 10 years, it's probably one of the most painful nights of my life to watch the lottery happen when you literally used to, until last year, you used to put everybody in one big gymnasium. And, you know, kids were hooping and hollering when their name was called, and mothers and grandmothers were sitting next to them crying whenever their names were not called. So how do you make it systemic? How do you get
more
people, more entrepreneurs like Scott to come and get involved as mentors and part of the education system in Chicago?
Well, thanks for doing what you do, and thanks for sharing your thoughts with us, Scott Catoon and Terry Howerton. Appreciate it, guys. Happy Tech Tuesday. We're back with more here on WGN. This is Anna DeVlantes in the Skyline Studios. As Steve just pointed out, you're listening to WGN. Coming up in just a few minutes here, we're going to have the top trending stories, what's making news across Chicago, what people are liking and sharing. A couple of coyote stories make the news. And Coach Q at the United Center, some big celebrations out there. I know Rokan and the crew are going to be broadcasting live from out there, but a number of things going on that are pretty exciting for the Hawks. But without further ado, let's get to Front Row Phyllis. She is a Chicago reporter. You cover the music scene for how long now, Phyllis? I mean, you've basically interviewed everybody, right?
Right. Pretty close. Yeah, it's been about a decade.
Top highlights for you? Are there any that come to mind off the top of your head?
You know what? Honestly, the first one, Dolly Parton. I know, right?
Oh, I love her.
Yes. She's as delicious as she looks and sounds.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And just so brutally honest, and you just kind of love what comes out of her mouth. It's just like, wow, didn't she just celebrate a birthday? I thought she celebrated birthday.
I think she did a couple days ago.
Yeah, which is super cool.
Right.
And she's just, she makes fun of herself. She's like, but she's just so lovable. So lovable.
So lovable.
And who else? Anybody else make the list on your top?
You know, there's so many of them, but just recently was Lady Antebellum. We finally got a chance to, at the 31st annual Country Cares for St. Jude Kids, which I was at last week, we finally got a chance to talk on the red carpet. And they're like, we've been trying to do this for several years. I said, I know. So it worked out great.
They said that. So
yeah, they
knew.
Said that. Yeah.
How does one get in touch with the Lady Antebellum's people? Because, they're huge stars.
Right.
Amazing. I mean, they're just like amazing talents.
They are amazing talents.
Everybody's clamoring to talk with
them. And they're very busy. You know, a lot of people don't realize is that when they come in for tours, they really just come in for a short period of time. And then they're off, you know, flying out again to the next city, and you know, so they're pretty busy.
Yeah, and I guess it's tiring sometimes too, so you got to cut them a break if they really don't have a ton of time for you.
Right.
But they had time for you.
So they did.
Let's frame up a little bit of what happened. Did this just happen over this past weekend?
Yes.
You were just in
Memphis,
Tennessee, so not Nashville where all the music stuff happens. The Memphis has got a big scene too.
Right.
And there's a special reason you were in Memphis.
Yeah, so this was the 31st annual Country Cares for St. Jude Kids. And this all started with Randy Owen from Alabama. Mm-hmm. And he actually reached out 31 years ago, and he said to the country community, I'd love your help. I'd love your support. And they all wrapped around him, and as years and years and years, and they have raised over $850 million.
Wow.
Through this cause. It's incredible what they have been able to do for St. Jude.
St. Jude, amazing cause.
Yes.
So over the years, you've had Blake Shelton there, Carrie Underwood, Brad Paisley was there this year, Luke Bryan's been years past. You have the biggest names in country music
who
participate in this.
Yeah.
And give time out of their busy schedules.
Yeah. They also perform.
So they perform.
So, yeah. So it's an event that takes place. There's the red carpet and then there's a jam session. So on Friday evening, Lady Antebellum performed and then they received one of the biggest awards, which was because they've been doing it for a decade and they've received.
Every year.
And not only do they do it every year, but they also participate throughout the year. They've given over $600,000. Mm. To St. Jude. And so they performed, they received the Angel Award, which is the biggest award to get from St. Jude. And then on Saturday evening, it was a jam session with Brad Paisley, Randy Owen, and Brett Young. Right?
Oh.
Right. And then they had one of the surviving patients, Addie Pratt, who met Brad last year. She got a chance to, you know, meet him, and they put a song together, and it's now on the radio.
I think we have a little bit of audio from the events that you covered, and some of the things you're describing. Let's listen in here.
Hey, we are here with Addie Pratt. So what do you love about St. Jude? What's that one thing? Because I know there's so many things, but what's that one thing that you love about St. Jude?
Oh, the people, for sure. It's just like a community of hope. It's like a family, really. It's
amazing. And they make you feel incredible.
Oh, yeah. They're just the most uplifting people in the entire world.
Aw, that is so cool.
Right?
So they perform the country music stars, but then they also go visit the kids.
They do.
In the hospital.
Yes. We all got a chance to visit the kids in the hospital, and I have to, not the kids, but we got a chance to tour the hospital, and I have to tell you, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And it's a happy place.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, happy place. And these kids, I mean, from everything from the foods that are brought in for them to one teenager asked for, a Xbox, and within 20 minutes, the concierge had an Xbox for him.
Gosh.
I mean, they really, really,
that?
They take care of the kids, they take care of the families. It's all about them. And everybody has a positive, happy attitude. It's amazing, amazing for everything that they're going through.
Well, those kids will inspire you, I think, because they grow up fast sometimes when they have to deal with medical treatments, but they're also, they just have that positive spirit.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's really a family environment from the CEO all the way down to, you know, the person that's checking you in over at the front desk. Mm. So, yeah. It's really incredible.
You have a special role with St. Jude.
Yes. I was asked to be a spokesperson for St. Jude, and I'm so excited. They have a huge local branch here in Chicago, and they do about 4 events during the year and could always use plenty of volunteers and support, and there's just always so many things going on. So, yeah.
So you've been able to see firsthand the kinds of things they do. You visited a number of their hospitals.
It's just one hospital.
Here, and then...
Yeah. It's in Memphis. That's the main hospital.
Oh,
that's all it is.
That's
it's just
it.
In Memphis. And then they have local branches in several different cities that do a lot of the fundraising.
So when you see those ads on TV and that kind of thing, that's where it's located. That's where the kids mostly will go.
Yes.
To receive treatments and to be part of this inspirational, happy place that you described. That's it.
Yeah, that's where it is.
And to think they get, you know, these big stars to come visit them and be part of this program.
It's incredible. And the kids so look forward to it. From the performances to hanging out with, you know, Jennifer Aniston to, I mean, it's pretty amazing. It really, really helps the kids.
So it isn't just the music stars. Year-round, they're having all kinds of programs like this.
Yes.
So what do they do locally then, Phyllis? What's their...
So locally, they have different events that take place. So there's 4 different events that take place, and that's what they do is they fundraise, and then the money goes to all the research that takes place. And, you know, what's really amazing is that if you have a child here in Chicago, and they want to, and they don't want to go to Memphis, and they'll work with the doctors here, for example, at Lurie Hospital, and they'll coordinate and share the research. So they're not opposed to any of that kind of stuff. You know, they want to work together and they want to take care of that child. You know, their theory is that right now it's 1 out of 5 children die of cancer, and they want it to be, there should be no child that dies of cancer.
So there's a treatment component. There's a research component. It's a research hospital, and they're trying to help solve this problem of pediatric cancers.
Yes.
It's funded mostly from donations from these different events.
It's all from donations. Yes. It's from individuals. It's from the fundraisers. It's from concerts that, you know, artists put on. Yeah, that's how they do it.
What an amazing thing. It really is. How about for you to get involved in that too? It's just.
Yes. It makes me feel so good. It just warms your soul.
Oh, I bet. So what's next for you, Phyllis? What else? I know you're always involved in
the
latest and greatest in music scene. Well, the Grammys are coming up.
Grammys are coming this weekend. You got to watch that. And that's going to be really, it's always a spectacle.
I love that. That's the world's greatest concert. Because
the best.
You get to see so many people across so many genres, but then they bring it because they're playing for each other. You got to make sure you impress when you've got the music industry in the house, right? You can't have a bad moment.
Exactly.
It's who are you looking forward to seeing? Who's,
you know, honestly, the first one that comes to mind is Lizzo. I mean, I love the fact that she's just blossomed into, and then I love seeing some of the little, you know, the other artists that come by. And I mean, it's really going to be, it's just great. I mean, and watching everybody on the red carpet, that's one of our favorites.
Will you be there for that? Are you
Not at the Grammys this year. We will be there next year.
Okay, next year you're
going. Next year we'll be there.
You'll be watching just like all of us year and rooting on. I love it too because it introduces you to some artists that you're like, wait a minute, I'm really liking this person.
Right.
The up-and-coming stars.
Yes, I love that.
And then, of course, we saw our Chance the Rapper get all those awards a couple years back. And
exactly.
Some Chicago ties that I'm always rooting for the local folks as well. How can people find you, Front Row Phyllis? Where do they go? Check out your work. Check out what you do.
All you got to do is go to frontrowphyllis.com.
And you're on all the appropriate social media. Is under that headline.
Everything.
Front Row Phyllis. Well, thank you for sharing this story, and thank for what you're doing with St. Jude. It's an amazing cause, and I'm glad you're able to talk about it and share it.
Thank you.
See you soon. Thanks, Phyllis. Back with more here, including trending topics on WGN Radio. A couple of coyote stories, as I mentioned. A lot going on at the United Center tonight. We want to talk about that, and also what people are giving up for Super Bowl tickets as the prices surge. More to come. Trending topics, and Steve Bertrand has stepped into the studio for this very moment in time. How are you, Steve?
Well, I'm super awesome. So now that I'm here with you, how
yes.
are you?
Yes, well, after, ever since you mentioned that you like the skunk smell, that that's yeah. a pleasant smell for you, I don't know. I have had some questions about you, Steve.
Really?
But then we had a number of listeners who said they agreed.
See, you make, I think, dangerous sort of presumptions about me.
Skunk smell?
That I don't like Oscar shows or award shows.
I didn't think you did.
Old curmudgeon-y sort of guy.
No, I didn't think old curmudgeon-y. Right. I just thought Oscar shows, no, you just weren't that guy.
I'm a big-hearted guy loves the smell of skunk.
Yeah, you like the smell of skunk, and we have so many other people who actually weighed in to say,
see,
absolutely, I do too, especially just a little light part of it in the air.
Now, so if you were to open yourself to the pleasurability of the skunk aroma, your summers would be more enjoyable.
Oh.
Because you wouldn't be avoiding it. You know, just try it this summer.
Well, all right, I'll give it a shot.
Start with a bottle of St. Pauli Girl, open it up over the winter just to break yourself in.
Someone said that you said St. Pauli Girl yeah. smells a little bit like skunk.
Like skunk beer, they used to call it, yeah.
Do you like St. Pauli Girl?
No. Just
but you do like skunk.
Right.
And then we also had someone who equated it with cheese, said that I like my pungent cheeses, I like a good skunk smell. Another person said it smells like summer.
That's a summer smell, yeah.
Really is.
We used to have skunk. I don't know if we still wouldn't in our backyard, but pretty regularly.
Did it look at you? Did you ever catch an eye?
One time I was leaving.
Scares you a little, doesn't
leaving
it?
For work in the morning, and it was like 5 feet from me, yeah.
Oh.
And they're blind, you know. Or they're not blind, but they don't see well at all.
Oh, no.
That's why they spray, because they can't see well enough to run away sometimes.
So what is the rule on the skunk? You just stand
still?
Give
them a wide berth, yeah.
Get away. That's what I do anyway, so I'm doing the right thing there. Okay, you'll like this headline. This is Trending Topics, and this one just crossed this afternoon. Kind of hard to believe, Steve Bertrand. You're a news professional. You might find this also hard to believe. I read it twice to make sure I was not reading The Onion. It is mm-hmm. not. It's from Chicago Business, and it's about City Hall getting a $100 million windfall from Wall Street. Here's the deal. Investor demand for low-rated Chicago debt was so high this turnaround that the amount the city pays on it went down $100 million.
So we're in such bad shape that it's making us money.
I don't know. Or maybe we were in such bad shape that it couldn't have been that bad, that they're thinking right. It's a little bit better than really, really, really bad. So we save $100 million.
See, that's seeing the optimistic side of things again.
Yes, you're very good at that. So investor confidence in the steps.
Don't go too far.
Here's the breakdown that the business analyst said. They're saying good prices were reflected by investor confidence in the steps the administration has taken toward improving the city's credit profile, including some spending cuts and the 2020 balanced budget,
That's great.
Least on paper. You know how they always say it's balanced?
Right,
air
on
quotes
paper.
Around that. It's balanced. It has to be balanced. That's the Constitution. Sometimes there's some funky math involved. We've learned that. We have learned that. Okay, Wheaton, did you see this one? The police officer shoveling up dozens of donuts. 6 dozen donuts on the road near Naperville Road and Donata Square East.
Donata
Square East. They arrived. The police officers did. They found 6 dozen donuts.
Were they just spilled off a truck or something? Or
I don't know that they ever did tell you exactly where the 6 dozen donuts came from.
That's discipline. Did the officer throw it away then?
Is that a cop question?
I'm just wondering, it's a question.
The donuts and the cops.
Yeah.
No, they shoveled them up, dumped them into the buckets, and removed them from the roadway. And that's all that's known. If you know where the donuts came from, please.
You know what that was. That was someone, I was going to say woman for no reason, but someone going to a charity breakfast or some breakfast meeting,
oh.
Put the donuts on the top of the car and took off.
I've done that before. Not with donuts, but all kinds of things.
Yeah, I'm sure.
From sunglasses or like a folder.
Never a child, though. No,
no, no. No, 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 no. That right. I have not done.
Good.
Thank God, no. A couple of things going on at the United Center. And we should say, Rokan and the team, they're over there to broadcast live. Big night at the United Center. Okay, so Patrick Kane, they're honoring him for his 1,000th point milestone.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? So they're going to have a big pregame ceremony and that kind of thing. It's this whole thing. His dad is there, and he's got a big homemade sign.
Oh, that's sweet.
To honor his son. Isn't that cool?
Do you remember those days when you used to make a sign? You go to Comiskey Park.
Yeah.
Make a sign
Wrigley
on the
for
sheet.
Me, but yeah.
Walk around the upper deck.
Oh, try to get it on TV.
Right,
try to wave at the camera person and think they see you when there's thousands of people there. You're like, hey, I'm over here.
Or now it takes away from the Toyota sign, so you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's certain places where people don't like you holding a sign
right.
in front of their face either. And then the other thing is going on is Coach Q.
He's
going to be
back,
there.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Panthers are playing the Panthers tonight. So he'll be there shortly after being named NHL Coach of the Decade.
Wow, good for him.
Seriously, big night, right? Reunited with some of the players who were part of those three Stanley Cups.
And Ro's there and we're not there?
And Ro is there. He works his way into this stuff. Have you noticed this about Ro?
Lauren is there.
Lauren's there. Kevin Powell's there. Kate Powell.
Kevin's there. Of course he is.
Of course he is. He's tweeting about it if you want to follow him on Twitter. He's got a lot to say about this. But that is... Oh, and by the way, it's also... Scarf night. So the first 10,000 people get a winter scarf. I love their giveaways at the United Center.
So
love them.
When I was first out of school, the second game of the baseball season is the easiest one to get tickets.
Okay.
Right? Because everyone wants to go to opening day.
Right.
And then they realize it's 32 degrees, so no one wants to go to the second game. And I love this. Vince Estrada was a buddy I went to school with, and he did a lot of charity work in St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And so he was up with us and a bunch of us friends, and we went to game two of the Cubs season, which would have been mid-80s, probably late-80s, and it was scarf day. Okay?
Great.
No one wanted their scarves, so Vince collected all these scarves, like dozens of scarves, and then gave them to the homeless people of St. Louis.
Oh, that's a nice gesture.
Well, I just love that the Cubs, St. Louis Cardinal fans are looking at these people wearing Cubs scarves.
Why did no one want the scarves?
They were kind of just cheesy scarves. We were in college. We didn't need them, but...
Oh, well, yeah. That's a cool thing.
But I just like the Cardinal Cub fan part of it.
I do, too. It's a great story. Great story. I would like to get one of those United Center ones tonight, but you got to be one of the first 10,000 fans. So the Coyote, did you see this? DNA test confirm it is the one that... attacked that little boy.
So did they put it down?
Not that I've heard yet. They also confirmed, though, it was shot by a BB gun, which might have been part of what made it so aggressive. That's what they remember. It was limping. There was a limping situation there. So they thought, which could have caused the limp in its movements, and
it's
also
a powerful BB gun.
Yeah, and I mean, sad. Come on,
right.
Leave him alone, right? But it's might have the animal care and control is saying that might have been why it was so aggressive. But they have it. They have the coyote, and we'll see. Not looking good for the coyote.
No,
I
wouldn't think so.
Another coyote on the runway forces flights to circle at Phoenix Sky Airport. This happened over the weekend. Employees were trying to coax the coyote off the airfield and tried to get it away into like the riverbed. But meanwhile, the planes had to circle so that they did not hit the coyote.
So that's interesting. I never really thought of like runway kill.
Wouldn't you think the coyote could get knocked out by planes? But they're saying only those with a valid license from the Game and Fish Department can capture or kill coyotes.
Not an American Airlines pilot.
No.
Okay.
Unless they happen to be also working for the Game and Fish Department in Phoenix. But that otherwise you cannot.
But
do you think
landing gear is so gentle? And I don't know the answer to it. That if it were to strike a dog or something, that it would be trouble.
I would think so. Wouldn't you think that when a plane lands, that it could really, it would kill the coyote?
Well, it would kill the coyote.
It would kill
people on board, though.
It would cause a problem?
Yeah, would
for
it
the
be
plane?
Worth it to divert and things like that?
I guess they put them in a holding pattern.
Oh, yeah. No, I wrote the coyote off a long time ago.
You're like, both coyotes,
right.
Bad news.
Right.
Sorry, kids. We don't want to talk about what happened to either of those coyotes,
right.
But they're off at a farm somewhere. This is really interesting. I know you follow the Royals, Steve.
I do.
And that also surprised me about you. Award shows. Royal follower, Harry and Meghan merchandise, up or down?
Well, I think they're selling it. I think it's a bad idea.
Why?
Because they're, I was hoping that they'd rise above that. Your cheap cousin now capitalizing on the...
Oh, I don't mean their personal merchandise, which they talk about on their website, all the things they're going to be involved with in the future.
But aren't they selling like Sussex scarves and things like that?
I think they are.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of kind of capitalize on the monarchy, maybe monetizing it a little bit. But this isn't all those souvenir shops you might see if you went to London right now. So you know how they always have the royal family mugs and souvenir like tea sets and kinds of all kinds of things that that feature the monarchy? They're saying that the Harry and Meghan merchandise is now at reduced prices after the split with the royal family. Tourist trinkets depicting the royal couple reduced to clear on Monday at shops across the UK. They're desperate to offload their stock. So in one outlet in Heathrow has reduced the price of its Harry and Meghan postcards from 99p, 99 pence, to 10 pence, a store worker told them.
So I wonder if they can sell now things that are more disrespectful to them.
Ooh, I wonder.
Like making fun of them more?
Kind of make fun of the whole Megxit thing?
Yeah.
You can get a Megxit shirt going or something like that? I would wonder if they would...
When Harry met Meghan?
Is that something else, too? I hadn't seen that one yet. But I feel like if they're leaving... Wouldn't the price of this stuff go up because they're not making anymore?
Yeah, I don't cut why it's not That's still in demand.
Half price at this. They looked at Heathrow. They looked at several shops. T10 selling for 2 for 1, half off on the mugs. Everything's,
I think,
you know,
I'm going to end up in London one day this summer, so maybe I'll bring you something.
Thank you. If you see a Meghan and Harry thing, I already have some Queen Elizabeth things, and I have the Queen Mom. I've got other things like that, so I would add that to my collection.
I'm going to get the Queen Mom to sign it for you.
Queen Mom's not alive anymore.
It'd be hard to do, but I'd give it a shot.
Thanks, Steve. I know you could do, if anyone could do that, you could do that. But that's something going for you. What would you give up to get a Super Bowl ticket? Speaking of things that are pricey, what would you give? People are saying they'd give up a kidney, abstain from sex for a year, or break up with their significant other. The prices of Super Bowl tickets are soaring this year. Kansas City Chiefs face off against San Francisco. And the online ticket platform SeatGeek shows the average price. Guess what it is?
$932.
$6,232. Wow. Average price, $6,232 to go to a Super Bowl. How much would you pay?
Well, I don't think I would. I'm not that keen
into
on
it.
No,
if the Bears were in it, how much would you pay?
You know, I've been to some big games before because of work, so I've kind of seen it. I'm not one to overpay.
Like,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm very lucky that way.
Average price for tickets sold in the past 24 hours, even higher, $6,700.
Now, they'll come down, though.
Woo, you think so? Yeah. I hope so. That's crazy.
Initial excitement, I think they're built up, and then they'll come down.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to do it for Trending Topics. The news is coming up next at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Also, we'll head out to the United Center and say hello to Ro Khan and the team out there broadcasting live on this very eventful night.